I'd like to call SSS meeting to order at 1:30 this afternoon. We have present three members. Two of our members are out for today and will not be able to join us. We have Senator Passman, Vice Chair, Senator Ellis, and myself, Betty Davis. We only have one bill coming before us today, a major piece of legislation, so we'll give all the time to Senate Bill 12. And my intent is not to pass it out of this committee at this time. We're going to take the overview of the bill. We will listen to testimony, and then we will adjourn. My staff member, Tom Overmeyer, will give an overview of this bill at this time.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Overmeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you is Senate Bill 12, an act relating to limitations on mandatory overtime for registered nurses and licensed practical nurses in healthcare facilities and providing for an effective date. SB 12 prevents registered nurses and licensed practical nurses from being forced to work mandatory overtime, that is, work beyond an agreed-to, predetermined, regularly scheduled shift, and it protects patients from the dangers caused by overworked nurses. Senate Bill 12 is applicable to all hospitals and healthcare facilities licensed in Alaska. Under SB 12, a nurse may not be required or coerced, directly or indirectly, to work more than 14 consecutive hours without 10 hours of rest, beyond 80 hours in a 14-day period, or to accept an assignment of overtime if, in the judgment of the nurse, the overtime would jeopardize patient or safe employee safety. Nurses, however, can volunteer to work additional shifts beyond this limit so long as the nurse does not work more than 14 consecutive hours without 10 hours of rest. In recognizing the complexity in delivering the quality nursing care on a 24-hour basis, a number of concessions have been made to Alaska hospitals in this bill. The 14-hour maximum workday with 10 hours of rest, which exceeds that allowed in many other states, permits a 2-hour transition for nursing supervisors to call in additional help after 12-hour shifts. This provision was intended to help remedy the problem of nurses being called back to work without adequate rest after working a 12-hour shift. Also, exceptions have been provided for flight nurses on medical transport, school nurses on school-sponsored field trips, and official state emergencies. This bill limits hospital reporting of hours to twice a year. It eliminates triple time penalties for egregious violation, limits maximum fines, and requires enforcement for only knowing violations. There are few official overtime complaints by nurses due to constant attention of patients, busy and varied schedules, and to some extent, fear of direct or indirect retaliation by employers. Many nurses testified to overwork, fatigue, disruption of family life, unexpected shift changes, mandatory overtime, mandatory on-call, over the course of several hearings on a similar bill, SB 28, in the 25th legislature. Low numbers of complaints and benign exit interviews may belie the growing dissatisfaction with the difficult work life of nurses, many of whom report burnout and leaving the profession. It has been estimated that 500,000 licensed registered nurses have left or are not working in the profession. There are bills in Congress to stem the nursing shortage, including financial aid for education and more rigorous regulation of overtime hours. In the House of Representatives Bill 2122 and the Senate Bill 1842 in the 110th Congress. And before that, H.R. 791 called the Safe Nursing and Patient Care Act. So this bill is not unusual. It's a nationwide problem. The Journal of American Medical Association, October 23-30, 2002, reported that nurses who suffer from fatigue, increased patient workloads, and shifts in excess of 12 hours greatly increase nursing hours and mortality among patients who have common surgeries. Both nurses and employers alike state that patient safety is paramount, but nurses are allowed to work far beyond their endurance levels, depending on age and condition, unlike other safety-sensitive jobs, including commercial airline pilots, FAA controllers, railroad engineers, perhaps long-haul truckers, and also, I believe, in the mining industry. The nursing profession must attract more young people to replace the aging workforce, which nationwide averages 46 to 49 years of age and is 95% women. In 2000, only 9% of registered nurses were under age 25 compared to 25% in 1980. Women are finding alternative career choices, so it is important for the nursing profession to create more jobs for nurses with higher wages, greater responsibilities, and better quality of life. Although the University of Alaska has made great progress in increasing the numbers of nursing graduates in Alaska and in improving nursing programs at all levels, these efforts can only be successful through employment and retention if the nursing profession can provide a quality of life comparable to that in competitive fields. SB 12 will help remedy this problem by encouraging employers to employ more nurses rather than mandatory overtime and on-call with short staffs to fill routine and critical care positions on a regular basis. The greatest beneficiaries will be the patients who will receive the care and the safety that they deserve.
Thanks for the overview. Are there...
And one other thing I might mention, there are many attachments to your package that you may want to go through at your leisure, but it indicates the difficulty throughout the country.
All right, thank you very much. We're going to start off our testimony. Who's doing the slide presentation? Is somebody going to do that? We'll take that first. If you'll state your name and what your affiliation is, I would appreciate it.
My name is Debbie Thompson. I'm the Executive Director and Program Director for the Alaska Nurses Association, and I'm here to talk to you about the dangers of mandatory overtime and the fatigue and the errors that happen with this. There are some that say nurses might as well have had a drink. The long hours worked by some nurses pose some of the most serious threats to patient safety. Prolonged periods of wakefulness can produce effects that are similar to that of the effects of an alcohol intoxication, and that includes decreasing the reaction time and the speed of mental processing. Periods of wakefulness in excess of 16 hours can produce performance decrements equivalent to a blood alcohol concentration of 0.05%. Alcohol intoxication is defined in our states as 0.08 to 1.10, varying among our individual states. My question would be, do you want an exhausted nurse taking care of you or your family members? Patient safety is at risk. The impact of hours worked and the duration of the work time and the overtime in these studies were shown to have a statistically significant impact on the patient safety as well as the nurse satisfaction and retention in the profession of nursing. The sources for these slides are the Michigan Nurses Association Public Policies Associates Incorporated and the Cost of Mandatory Overtime for Nurses, written in August of 2004. The likelihood of making an error has increased with the longer the hours are worked and was three times higher when nurses work shifts lasting 12.5. I found it interesting to note that working overtime increased the odds of making an error, at least one error, and it didn't matter if it was 12 and a half hours or 10 hours or 8 hours. It was overtime over your originally scheduled shift. The authors of this study concluded that these findings imply a link between poor working conditions, long hours and overtime, mandatory or otherwise, and patient safety. In response, there are definite reasons to consider eliminating mandatory overtime for nurses, and almost half of the states in this nation have either enacted or are in the process of introducing and enacting legislation for this issue. Threats to patient safety that are likely to result from extensive nursing overtime include your nurse being less alert to changes in your patient's condition, having slower reaction times, an increase in medication errors and adverse drug events, an increase in nosocomial or hospital-acquired infections, and an increase in decubiti, or what lay people understand as bed sores. And it's also the last two, as part of our reimbursement, are no longer reimbursed because they are acquired in the hospital. And I would think that that is partially because of an increase in seeing that happen. The Institute of Medicine estimates that approximately 100,000 hospital deaths can be attributed to medical errors each year. Mandatory overtime is a seriously contributing factor to medical errors, and the final recommendation of the IOM is that all overtime, voluntary and mandatory / involuntary, done by nurses should be curtailed. And as a side to this, they also have been working on what they allow the interns and the residents in medicine to work now as their shifts. This is not a bargaining issue. This is a public safety issue and a patient safety issue. The Alaska public has a right to expect when they walk into a healthcare facility that the nurse taking care of them is properly rested and alert, and that their RN hasn't been working for 16 hours that day already. When a patient registers at a hospital, they should not be concerned or have to worry about whether or not that facility has a collective bargaining agreement, or to see if the nurses were successful in bargaining for the staff to have reasonable working conditions and not be overextended. Not all nurses in the state of Alaska are represented by a union, and I would ask again for you to consider, what do we do for these nurses and for their patients? And it is not just a urban issue. Fairbanks nurses are not represented. The Matsu Valley nurses are not represented. So it affects larger institutions also. Washington State passed their no mandatory overtime law in 2002, and at that time, Ann Piazza, the lobbyist for WSNA, testified before Representative Peggy Wilson's special House Hess Committee in January of 2006. And she stated that the state of Washington passed a law to prohibit mandatory overtime for nurses with the cooperation of WSNA, other nursing unions, and the Washington Hospital Association. Mandatory overtime puts patients, nurses, and their profession at risk. Many healthcare facilities have turned to the use of mandatory overtime as a common practice to fill longstanding staffing and scheduling problems. Shifting the entire burden to the employees when there is a labor shortage is not the answer to attracting qualified persons to our profession. One of the reasons that the nursing shortage as it is today is because qualified nurses are not working in the field, or they are leaving the profession because they can no longer work the long hours or safely take care of their patients. I have personally spoke with nurses who have left nursing because the stress of going home every night and reliving their entire 12-hour shift to make sure that they did everything they could do for their patients was too much, and that was they felt better for them and their family's health if they went and found some other profession to work in. I feel forced overtime is adding to this shortage. A Massachusetts study and the research from the University of Massachusetts shows a strong link between working overtime and sustaining a work-related injury. This was found to be true for all occupations, and working longer than 12 hours a day or more was associated with a 30% increase in that risk. States which have already passed or banned forced overtime are listed here, and I have a map later on that will show you what's happening with this. These are states that are lining up and pushing through with their legislation. And when you look at the map, I know that that's a little bit hard to see maybe, but If you look, you can, the ones in green are the states that already have it. The striped, blue striped are those states that are working to get it passed. Support the Alaska Senate Bill 12 because your nurse will always be there for you in a time of unforeseen emergency situations, disease outbreaks, natural or man-made disasters. Your nurse will be able to voluntarily work overtime so long as the work is consistent with the professional standards of safe patient care and does not exceed 14 consecutive hours. With Senate Bill 12, a nurse will be able to say, I have worked my shift, I'm tired, and possibly I'm not as swift as I otherwise would be if I had had some rest. My patients could possibly be at risk if I push any longer or any harder. Knowing his or her own limits, the nurse can refuse to be assigned the forced overtime in the first place. Our nurses would now be able to do this without fear of reprisal or loss of job. I have questions for you as lawmakers. I ask, where is the law that says as a nurse you lose your right to a basic human rights, to your time off, time to rest, time to eat, time to recharge, and time to have a family life? The federal government has passed laws that limit the number of hours that pilots can safely fly, truckers can safely drive, conductors and engineers can drive a train or a ship, all for public safety. Why would we not try to do the same for people when they are at their most vulnerable and in a hospital ill? I would ask if you think nurses should have the right to refuse an overtime assignment if they feel either their patients or their own safety is in jeopardy, other than at a time an unforeseen emergency. When you answer these questions, I hope that you will not only support Senate Bill 12, but also the nurses that have come forward with risk of their jobs and their livelihoods to provide quality patient care to you and your loved ones at your most vulnerable time. I urge that you support Senate Bill 12. It will protect the individual patient. It will protect the registered nurses and other nurses in this state. It will protect the healthcare facilities. It will enhance the nursing profession. It would help recruit nurses. It would help retain nurses. And it's just good public policy, and I see it as a common sense bill. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions at this time? We'll go now to Rod Beatty.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rod Beatty, President, CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. My pleasure to present some testimony on behalf of our members today. I think you have this before you, but I'll go down through it so it's on the record. Ashner represents 27 private, federal, state, and tribal healthcare facilities located throughout Alaska. The testimony presented here has been approved by Ashner's general membership, and I did at the end of the testimony give you a list of all of the facilities that are part of ASHNA's membership. Senate Bill 12 sponsor, Senator Betty Davis, is well respected by ASHNA's members for her commitment to improving healthcare access and quality in Alaska. We share Senator Davis's passion for increasing eligibility levels for Denali Kid Care to at least 200% of the federal poverty level and in seeking creation of an Alaska Health Commission to address Alaska's healthcare issues. However, ASHNA's membership does not believe that Senate Bill 12 is needed to assure continued delivery of excellent patient care throughout the state, and therefore does not support Senate Bill 12. ASHNA's members have had and will continue to have a strong commitment to respect the individual importance of each nurse in our healthcare delivery mission and to treat each nurse fairly in the workplace. We believe our annual nurse overtime survey demonstrates that this commitment to our nursing staff and to our patients is being met. ASHNA has conducted a facility survey on mandatory overtime for the last 4 years to gain a better understanding of the frequency with which mandatory overtime is used by our member facilities. Mandatory in this context is overtime that is not willingly worked by a nurse and does not include on-call overtime hours. As displayed in the latest survey for 2007 and 2008, which is included with the testimony. The number of mandatory overtime hours imposed is minimal and only occurs in a few facilities. Most of that mandatory overtime occurs at the state-operated Alaska Psychiatric Institute, but even that level of mandatory overtime usage is down substantially from 2006. We don't have the kind of abuse of mandatory overtime that led to the state of Washington's legislation. If I might just take you to that chart for a second, give you a little more explanation of what you see there. As was mentioned, not all of our members are represented in collective bargaining, formal collective bargaining. That's the first column. 9 do participate in formal collective bargaining, and 18 do not. I ask every year how individual facilities view the nursing shortage, just from a subjective question, to see whether they think it's better or worse based on their recruiting for nurses and their experiences in keeping positions filled. This time around, 8 of the facilities reported that they thought the situation was about the same. 9 reported that they thought the nursing shortage was worse, and 3 thought it had improved. So it continues to be a struggle in their minds in terms of keeping adequate nursing staff. The next column gives you the kinds of shifts that are worked in each of these facilities, anywhere from 7.5 in the state facilities up to 16 in one of our psychiatric facilities that are allowed as far as nursing shifts. Nurse vacancy rates for 2007-2008, fairly close, right around 10-12% on average across the state, although it is significantly higher in some facilities, like in 2007, Mount Edgecombe was reporting 25%, although they're now down to 12 in the latest report. But we still have Providence Valdez was reporting a 22% vacancy rate in their nursing staff. The yellow column is particularly important. That's the number of mandatory overtime hours that are reported by our members throughout the year. And that number continues to come down. There's approximately 4, or there were 4 in 2008 that reported some mandatory overtime being assigned. Most of that, again, at API. The next two columns deal with on-call, and although on-call is not governed under the provisions of this legislation, just wanted to let you know that we do have on-call policy in place in most of these facilities, and they're usually around specific units that require a highly technical level of skill with the nursing staff. And then what the frequency is, number of times per month that on-call is required. The blue column is really where the action is in terms of trying to fill nursing gaps. That is the number of temporary nursing hours that our member facilities purchase a year in order to not resort to mandatory overtime to fill those schedules. And as you can see, in 2007, it was nearly 250,000 hours of temporary nursing time. This year, we have one facility, Fairbanks, which hasn't reported, but we have approximately 200,000 hours. And that's been one of the significant strategies for being able to keep enough nurses in each shift without having to resort to overtime. And then the final column is the number of grievances on this issue. And every year we reported that none have come forward. And I know there's a feeling that that's because nurses don't want to file those grievances. But that's not consistent with what the information shows in terms of what we get from our personnel staff at these facilities. Ashton member facilities have taken a number of steps over the years to minimize the need to use mandatory overtime to fill gaps in nursing shifts. And some of the examples include financially contributing to the University of Alaska expansion of their nursing program from 100 nurses each year to over 200 nurses each year. Second is creating clinical experiences for student nurses and recently graduated nurses to gain hands-on nursing experience required to complete their education or to achieve the patient care experiences necessary to become employed in a hospital or nursing home setting. Providing distance learning opportunities so local residents can take nursing courses in their own community with minimal need to spend large amounts of time out of town to achieve their clinical experiences. This has been very successful in several of our communities. And purchasing, again, tens of thousands of hours of temporary nursing staff. Even with these initiatives, approximately half of the facilities reporting on this year's survey believe the nursing shortage situation has worsened and the solutions to address this shortage become more complex. Recap of what our concerns with this bill are. First is that the data does not show that hospitals and nursing homes are relying on mandatory overtime to fill staffing gaps. On the contrary, it shows that its usage is rare. Second, that Ashland believes working hours and scheduling are appropriately a local employer responsibility to negotiate with its employees. This is being done in every community in a responsible manner with equal concern for employee and patient concerns. Workforce challenges vary significantly from one community to the next, making a single approach to addressing this challenge unworkable. A number of facilities are either in negotiations with nursing staff currently or will begin those shortly. We believe these negotiations should be given an opportunity to address any concerns arising from the nursing staff. With respect to overtime required to meet on-call requirements, these understandings are locally developed again between management and nursing in each community based on unique needs and staffing challenges each face. I think you will hear more testimony about the importance of having the flexibility to be able to bring a nurse in when you otherwise aren't scheduling a procedure, but it happens anyway, and you have to have the right personnel there in order to make sure that procedure is done correctly. And again, these are predetermined on-call hours with nursing staff that's agreed to as part of that local discussion. The ongoing monitoring systems that we have in place operated by federal, state, or independent private agencies that review patient care here in Alaska show Alaska healthcare quality is excellent. None of these organizations has identified use of mandatory overtime as a problem related to delivery of excellent patient care in Alaska. I heard the report from the nurses report and also from IOM, but there is no evidence that Alaska has been using mandatory overtime and that it's creating any kind of a patient care adverse outcome. Ashton's members have worked diligently to reduce the nursing shortage problem in Alaska by contributing substantial funding over the last 4 years to help support and expand the nursing program. And even though we're graduating 200 nurses a year, it does not appear that we're graduating enough, and they're not getting out into some of the rural communities where they're desperately needed. And finally, that the bill would impose a new reporting burden for Alaska facilities, and these reports would have to be filed semi-annually, must contain detailed work hour information for each staff nurse employed by the facility as well as each contract nurse. For those reasons, we think that moving forward with this kind of legislation really isn't going to help the facilities and their staff deliver the kind of health care that's needed in Alaska, and we would urge that you not pass this legislation. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. And is there any questions? Are there any questions?
Yes. Madam Chair.
Senator.
If I'm reading the chart that you have here, it appears that there's only two facilities that have hours beyond the 14 hours that's set forth in this bill. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Which column are you looking at?
I'm looking at length of shift hours, and it looks like there's only two that include shifts, one at 15 hours and one at 16 hours. And that's Alaska Pioneer Homes, all six facilities, and then North Star Behavioral Health System. All the others are shifts that are less than this bill addresses.
Through the chair, Senator Pascal, that is correct. That the shifts are shorter than 14 hours for the most part. Right. What you run into trouble with is if somebody is working additional hours beyond 12, then the 14 hours becomes an issue. But in the facilities that I've talked to thus far, when they go beyond the 12-hour shift or the 14-hour shift, we're usually talking about an hour or two. It's not 7 or 8 hours that we're talking about. Now, an on-call situation can be very different.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Yes, you may.
You put the word mandatory in parentheses, so it's like a in-house definition. And so what I'm trying to find out is, what is the in-house definition of mandatory in your mind, so that it may be a different definition than mandatory in a layman's context?
Through the chair, Senator, that's a very fair question, because that has been, I think, one of the issues in a lot of the testimony over the last few years is, what do we mean by mandatory? in our context, and I think in the context of this legislation as it's drafted, is that if a nurse is working overtime willingly, they're not being told they have to, that's not mandatory. If a nurse is following a prescribed schedule for on-call and they're brought back in once or twice or three times during, you know, outside of the regular shift to deal with patient care, that's not mandatory. That's regularly prescribed work scheduling. So I think there's some who will be testifying that will have a different take on that. But again, if it's agreed upon between the nurse and between the nursing supervisor, and they willingly work those hours, then we don't view that as mandatory. And I don't believe that the definition intended by this bill views it as mandatory either.
No further. All right, thank you very much. I'm going to go off site. Ron Alder, are you there?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Ron Adler, the CEO and Director of API, and I'm just available today to answer any questions.
Oh, you're not here to? Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Is there Maria Orr out there?
Marie?
This
is Marie Orion.
Okay. You want to testify?
Yes, sir. I am here to testify in behalf of North Star Behavioral Services, and I'm here to speak as a nurse, as a mother, and as a wife. I have voluntarily worked as a nurse in a having a Baylor position that is just 16 hours. I work as competent and efficient as everybody else working the 8 and the 12-hour shift. This position has helped me tremendously, and I would like to tell you about my family to better understand why I absolutely need this position. I'm a mother of two, and after staying home for 5 years to raise my kids until they started school, I initially worked the 8 hours night shift, working 5 nights a week. And during the day, I am the primary caregiver of my kids. My daughter, a 7-year-old, goes to Northern Lights ABC here in Anchorage, and this is a non-zoning school where I am responsible to take my daughter to school and bring her back home. During the day, I also homeschool my son. With that alone, with working night shift, you would imagine that I don't have sufficient sleep, but I've tried my very best to still perform adequate and competent nursing care to my patients. And when they have a Baylor opening at the facility that I work with, I saw the light because this has solved a lot of my problems. My kids need a healthy mom. My patient needs a healthy nurse. And with this Baylor position, I'm able to work Saturday and Sunday and take care of my kids and rest from Monday to Friday while my husband works Monday to Friday. The other thing too is that we have to consider that my husband, who works in the food industry, and with the unstable economy, they have been cutting his hours. And with that alone, he's missing, with our income alone in a month right now, we're missing one paycheck. But because I do have this Baylor shift, I'm able to pull one extra shift at night during the week, and able to supplement our income. Now, if this Baylor position will be terminated or will be abolished, that would put a lot of, you know, mother and nurses just like me into a big trouble financially, health-wise. So I am humbly asking the legislative assembly body to reconsider keeping the Baylor position. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? I do want to say to you, in the last bill that was presented last year, there was an exception in there, and a form of the Baylor plan was in the bill when presented. It is not in there at this time, but as we have the discussion, if it's decided, we do have an amendment to put there. If the people that are carrying that are introducing this bill have a desire to have that, we'll discuss it at a later time.
Thank you, sir.
You're quite welcome. I'm not sir, but you're welcome.
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Mary Stockhouse?
My name is Mary Stackhouse. I have been a registered nurse going on 36 years now, and I have worked in all sorts of facilities in several different states. However, the majority of my time now seems to have been in Alaska since I started in Ketchikan in 1987, and I have been at Providence in Anchorage since 1988. During that time, I have seen a lot of changes, and I have worked in a lot of different areas. In fact, I have now worked in every hospital situation and unit that there is. I currently am in newborn intensive care. I started there about 11 years ago, which was a total change from big people, where I had done acute care as well. During my professional career, I have worked 8-hour shifts, 10-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts, and lots of overtime, both voluntary and not so voluntary. And by that I mean it was not necessarily written in the plan at the hospital that it would be mandatory, but there has been a coercion of sorts in that there's nobody else to replace you. Think of your patients, think of your coworkers, you must stay. I will never abandon a patient. Abandonment for a nurse is cause for loss of licensure, as well as I don't can't imagine a nurse ever doing it. And abandonment simply means that you leave your patients at the end of your shift when you have not reported off to someone else. Until you hand over your patients to another nurse, it is abandonment if you leave before then. The problem that I see with the idea of mandatory overtime is that it is just that. It is mandatory. It is not a choice of the nurse. The nurse does not have the ability to say, I can't do it, I'm too tired, I've already worked 12 hours without a break, you know, you need to find somebody else. Or, I've already worked 4 or 5 days this week, I've been trying to help cover, but I just can't do another one. You're going to have to find someone else. If the nurse is allowed to say, I am too tired, I cannot do it, I have other obligations, I have a life, I don't work to live, or, you know, I work to live, I don't live to work. And I have a family, and I have other obligations in my life that are important to me. I take my patients very seriously, and it disturbs me immensely. In the recent past, we have had enormous numbers of babies in our unit, far past what we had staffing for. Thanks to some of our new people that are in the lead, we have been able to increase our staffing levels, which has dramatically made a difference. We need more, but we're still working on it. We still have big fluxes in our census, and when the census goes high, that's when we're most at risk of not having had a break, not having had a lunchtime. We can't cover for each other because there's too many babies and they're too critical. And if you go from baby to baby just doing your average assignment where the babies are hopefully stable, there's a lot involved just in doing their assessment, watching them, doing their medications, feeding them, diapering, you know, the simple little things. But we're dealing with the tiniest, most immature, most fragile beings on earth. And we are getting them younger and younger and younger. Some are coming out 22 weeks, 23 weeks. It takes an incredible amount of paying attention to them to note the subtle changes, to make those fine adjustments in their medications, the delicate handling they have to have. And if the nurse has been there, her blood sugar's low because she hasn't gotten out for a snack, you know, she hasn't had to go to the bathroom because she hasn't had time to drink water, and you just get exhausted and you can't think clearly. And it's so critical, especially with the littlest ones or in any critical care area, but with the babies, we have seconds to respond. With adults, you might have a few minutes to respond. But if you don't have enough staff and the staff that you have is already exhausted, then you're running the risk of some of the babies not making it, some of the adults not making it, some of the nurses not making it. And nurses leave nursing in droves because it's not a big, fancy thing. Nurses in my generation, It was nursing or teaching. You didn't have a whole lot of options if you wanted to be a professional. Now there's a wealth of things out there for our young people to have, especially women, and they can make all kinds of gigantic steps in different directions. That way they don't put their families at risk from things we can bring home to them, or their self at risk. They don't risk someone else's life because they have made a poor choice or they weren't thinking clearly enough to make that instantaneous decision. Nurses do deal with life and death every single day. And it's very important that all of us are well rested, have a family life or at least some time away from the institution, that we're not tied to it. And mandatory call ties us to it. Mandatory call is just that. It is not an option. It is agreed to time. You know when it's going to happen, but you don't know when you're going to be called in. And if you just worked an 8 or 10 or 12 hour shift and you're the one on call and there's all of a sudden another patient or another case that needs to be done, it's your turn. And if you have the option to say, I can't do it, I want to go home, that's fine. We have seen instances where that has not been the case. The nurses said they're too tired and they say it's too bad, it's your turn, you're on call, you will stay. And that is a very risky, risky situation. And I don't want to be the patient that is lying there waiting for help and my nurse is nowhere to be found because they're either working too busy or she's found dead herself someplace in a hallway, or she's collapsed because she's too exhausted to continue. And I have personally gone into the hospital every single time my husband has been a patient, and I stay with him 24/7 because I know how short we get of nurses, and I don't want something to be missed. And as a nurse, I can look out for him. You as lay people, you could go in and stay with your loved ones, but are you going to know when there is a change that needs to be observed? Are you going to know that your loved one has had a change in their condition that only a nurse can recognize? And if the nurse is too tired, she's going to overlook it, not be able to respond to it, and put you in jeopardy, put your loved one in jeopardy. And you may not even know that it's been overlooked, but the nurse would know if she was healthy enough and alert enough at the time to take care of it. And I'm just real in favor of this bill. I know we've been going over it year after year. Betty, I appreciate you bringing it up, but it needs to be addressed, because otherwise we're not going to be able to recruit new nurses. Some of us are getting really old now and we'd like to retire, but there's no one to replace us. And the pool of younger nurses is smaller and smaller and smaller. And the pool of the older nurses is bigger and bigger. But you know what? We won't last forever. And if we're mandated to work overtime, we'll burn out even faster and we will leave as well. And all it does is spiral into the nursing shortage. If I was going to look at a new hospital and they were unionized, I would love to see them unionized. And then I look at the contract and it says mandatory overtime may be used. I'm going to say no, I'm going to go to another hospital that doesn't have it. I'm going to take my choices and go somewhere else. And that's what a lot of our new nurses are doing. They're signing on at a hospital, they'll get their sign-on bonus, they'll stay the couple of year commitment, and then they'll say, you know what? This is not what I expected. I did not realize I was going to be tying my life to this place. I have a life outside of that. I have other options. I'm going somewhere else. In fact, on my last flight 2 weeks ago, I flew back on an Anchorage, on an Alaska Airlines jet from Seattle. One of my flight attendants was a nurse. She was a young woman. She had been in nursing for less than 10 years, and she got out because of the working conditions. And this is one of the working conditions that scared her to death. She said she was working long hours, there wasn't enough coverage, there was not enough breaks, too many patients, and she was scared to death. She was going to kill someone because she could not be everywhere that she needed to be. And when her coworkers are saying, you're a flight attendant, you could be a nurse and make tons of money, why are you doing this? And her statement while I was standing there was, if I made $150 an hour as a nurse, it wouldn't matter. I would not go back because I would not be able to live with myself if I harmed a patient because I was too tired to continue. And that's the biggest issue that I see that we're facing with the mandatory overtime. If the nurse can say no and say, just go home, fine. If the nurse wants to volunteer and feels fine and is healthy enough to do it, let's go for it. All of us will be there in the emergency, in the true emergency. We have an earthquake, you know every nurse in Alaska is going to be there helping out. But when it just comes to a matter of staffing, because we don't have enough staff, mandatory overtime is not the way to go. There's other ways to work around it to get the staff that you need. And I just appreciate you bringing this up again, Senator Davis, and hopefully we can have everyone understanding.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Evangeline Doltemain. You want to state your name, please?
Sure.
And who you're with?
Hi, my name is Evangeline Doltemain. Everybody calls me Angel. My name is Akulik. I'm originally from Shaktulik and Mikoryuk. But I'm here today on behalf of the Alaska Native Health Board. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Native Health Board. We represent 24 regional and tribal health organizations from all across the state, approximately 7,000 employees. We serve 130,000 Alaska Native and American Indian patients, and we're here today to express our deep reservations with Senate Bill 12. The Alaska Native Health Board appreciates and values the services that nurses provide to patients in Alaska, especially our Alaska Native patients, whom we consider to be our customer owners. It is the experience of tribal health providers that nurses are highly dedicated, caring providers who will give their last ounce of skill to care for their patients. Tribal health providers expend a great deal of effort and expense to recruit and retain good nurses to provide care and cover all necessary shifts. Providing adequate and safe nursing staffing is an important part of tribal health providers' overall responsibility to provide high-quality care to our Alaska Native patients. It is out of this responsibility to care for our patients that we express concerns over Senate Bill 12. First, we feel that Senate Bill 12 will hurt patient care, especially in rural Alaska. In healthcare, the guiding principle is do no harm. However, with Senate Bill 12 in many remote tribal health locations, all it would take to leave a shift uncovered would be for one or two nurses to decide for any reason or for no reason at all that they don't want to work overtime. The rural tribal health provider would in many cases have no choice but to simply not cover that shift and put other patients at risk. Because rural tribal health providers do not have the urban luxuries of, first, calling other off-duty nurses, two, getting temporary agency nurses to cover that shift on short notice, or three, redirecting patients to a nearby facility. In practice, Senate Bill 12 would make it impossible for tribal health providers to make sure all shifts are covered, particularly in remote rural parts of the state. Perhaps this is why almost no rural states have adopted similar legislation. The second reason, Senate Bill 12 is an unfunded mandate that will unnecessarily drive up cost. Many Alaska tribal health providers are having a tough time financially due to sky-high energy bills and other costs commonly associated with running a facility in rural Alaska. They have had no choice in some cases but to lay off healthcare workers and reduce services. Under Senate Bill 12, even in a situation where a tribal health provider might be able to cover a shift when one or more nurses have chosen not to work overtime, the tribal health provider would likely only be able to do so at great cost. For instance, either overhiring extra regular shift nurses ahead of time, assuming that there's a nursing pool, and hoping that one of the new hires is willing to pull a non-scheduled shift. Or two, flying in temporary agency nurses from an urban area at the last minute, which would be extremely costly. Or three, transferring or referring patients to an urban provider, adding an additional expensive travel cost to providers and to the Medicaid program. Laws such as Senate Bill 12 are intended to solve urban problems, not necessarily applicable in all of Alaska. Legislation such as this has been adopted in approximately 15 states, nearly all urban, out of concerns that hospitals might be, one, under hiring and then abusing mandatory overtime in order to control payroll and benefit costs, or two, abusing mandatory overtime rules as a collective bargaining tactic. There is no evidence that these conditions exist in Alaska. While there are well-documented chronic challenges of nursing staffing, particularly among tribal health providers, these staffing challenges are no different than the staffing challenges we experience with all the healthcare profession categories. And while we cannot speak for others, we can say unequivocally that Alaska tribal health providers are not purposely understaffing as an abusive labor practice. The reality is that to the degree we have nursing staffing challenges, it is because of the tight national labor pool, compounded by the never-ending challenge of figuring out how to get good nurses, doctors, technicians, administrators, and others to live and work in remote Alaska locations. Senate Bill 12's proponents agree that there are few official overtime complaints by nurses, and that there are low numbers of complaints and benign exit interviews. We acknowledge that nursing is a tough profession. The work itself is challenging enough, in addition to the difficult shift scheduling that out of necessity must put patients' needs first. But those challenges come with the territory in healthcare. Physicians, administrators, technicians, clerks, etc., all must adjust the scheduling of their work to meet the needs of their patients. And finally, we believe Senate Bill 12 is unnecessary because mandatory nurse overtime can be addressed by other means. Because of the well-documented nurse shortage in Alaska, there's a very tight labor market for nurses. Nurses have significant leverage in negotiating the terms and conditions of their employment. Hours and shifts to be worked, shift swapping flexibility, on-call requirements, and how to handle anticipated overtime are commonly agreed to in employee agreements. In reality, the tight labor market for nurses in Alaska, combined with well-established avenues and procedures for nurses to negotiate the terms and conditions of employment, give nurses more than sufficient leverage to address any concerns they might have with regard to mandatory overtime or any other terms or conditions of employment. Senator Davis and the committee, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of Alaska tribal health providers. We appreciate the opportunity to express our concerns over Senate Bill 12, and we look forward to working with you in the future in a cooperative manner on the many other important health care issues pending legislation.
All right, thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Senator Besk.
Angel, you say that for rural Alaska that it is not necessarily a problem that, urban America. What size community do you believe, if there was an exemption, what size community or with a population of that size or lower would you suggest would be exempt if there was to be an exemption?
That's very difficult to say through the chair, I'm sorry.
Yes.
That's very difficult to say, mainly because whatever happens in urban centers ultimately impacts every rural facility. Through recruiting challenges and staffing challenges, if something is placed in urban Alaska, and a nurse has the opportunity to stay in urban Alaska, that makes it much more difficult for us to recruit them out into rural facilities. So I don't know that even setting a population standard would necessarily assist in ensuring that rural Alaska isn't hit as hard by a bill like this.
Any further? Thank you for your testimony, and I do want to say, though, you should get with the Nurses Association and share with some of your concerns, and there might be some room for you guys to negotiate some changes or whatever in this particular bill. All right, thank you. Cindy Ukari or Elkari? All right, you can say what it is when you get here for me, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cindy Alkire, okay, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of Providence Health and Services Alaska. Okay. I am the Assistant Chief Nurse Executive at Providence Medical Center. I've been a nurse for over 26 years, and I provide direct oversight of patient care and nursing for the Children's Hospital, which includes the neonatal intensive care unit, all of maternity services, and pediatrics. Providence opposes Senate Bill 12 for many reasons. First, most Alaska hospitals have been successful at avoiding mandatory scheduled overtime, recognizing that nurses need rest between their shifts. Providence has no scheduled mandatory overtime within our facility. Secondly, this bill does not appropriately address the on-call issue currently present in our operating rooms, post-anesthesia care unit, cath lab, and dialysis unit. On-call is defined as being available within 30 minutes to come into work and care for patients in emergency situations. This is only used to provide a rapid response to care for these patients when there's a life-threatening incident. I've read through the history of this legislation, and the on-call issue appears to be the most critical issue that remains unresolved. The issue of on-call is not easily solved from hospitals since we provide 24-hour-a-day emergency services. Nurses working in our operating room, cath lab, which deals with removing clots when there are strokes, acute MIs, doing procedures to help with that, and caring for babies with cardiac defects that are detected emergently. Dialysis also has emergency situations that come in after normal operating hours when someone is overdosed on drugs or has a life-threatening need for dialysis. It takes specialized training and experience to work in each of the areas that I've just mentioned. Sometimes it can take as much as 2 years for a nurse to be able to function in one of those areas. So that's a long training program. For instance, one of those would be in our operating room when we have the heart team who actually has to come in the middle of the night to do surgery emergently on patients who've had a heart attack and they have clogged arteries. While routine procedures in these areas are scheduled during normal operating hours and we have pretty much 24/7 one team on site, if that team is in an emergency surgery or doing a surgery after normal scheduled hours, then we have a call team to come in if a second emergency arises. This on-call system is necessary for us to be able to provide emergency care in a tertiary care center that we have for Providence. Our interpretation of this bill uses on-call the same as work, thus limiting staff in these critical areas to be on call in combination with the time they've already worked. For example, if a nurse has already worked a shift and is on call the same day, he or she could easily exceed 80 hours in a 14-day window or the more than 14 hours in one day. Furthermore, nurses many times choose to take their call on the days that they're scheduled to work, so that it doesn't interfere with their regular scheduled days off. This legislation would impact the nurses' ability to manage their own schedule and their own time off. While Providence has done much to limit the amount of on-call, it is still necessary because these areas must staff and have them available for emergencies during evenings, nights, holidays, and weekends. If requiring an on-call staff person to fulfill their on-call obligation is considered mandatory overtime, this bill would adversely impact the ability of hospitals to provide emergency surgery, heart caths, and emergency dialysis. The way this bill is written and the implications on the on-call piece, it could result in unsafe conditions for patients because there could not be enough volunteer staff to provide the experience needed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There is even a risk that Alaskan hospitals would have to close some of their beds, causing patients to seek health care outside of Alaska. I ask you to consider for a moment, if you were a family of a patient in our facility, take our neonatal intensive care unit, since it's one of the places that I oversee, where we have the most vulnerable babies born, sometimes 22, 24 weeks, on ventilators, critically ill, and you're the family watching this baby go through a crisis. One of the complications that can occur when you have a baby that small, when you start feeding them so that they can grow and develop, is they can get an infection in their intestines. That infection can lead abruptly to the bowel breaking apart and rupturing. If that occurs and a baby doesn't get surgery right away, then that baby will die. If the on-call team or the OR team is in operating on someone else and there's not a call team to call in to do surgery on that baby, then it would be a physician's duty or a nurse's duty to go to that family and say that there's nothing we can do for your baby because we can't get someone to come in and do the surgery your baby needs to stay alive. That's the kind of crisis that could happen in our neonatal intensive care unit, on pediatrics when we have a trauma, a kid who's been in a car wreck, who comes in and needs something put in its brain so that its brain won't swell and it die. It could happen with a husband who has a heart attack, whose arteries are clogged and needs to have a cath procedure to remove those clots out of his heart so he can live. There's many, many instances where this could happen, and we as healthcare cannot allow that. So we have to have flexibility in the way we staff and the way we're able to bring staff in to care for those emergent situations. Quality and safe patient care is Providence's first priority. Hospitals and health systems have many safeguards in place to ensure that patients receive quality care, including detailed inspections by the federal government, the State Department of Public Health, and private accrediting agencies such as Joint Commission. Quality performance improvement, staffing competencies, and patient satisfaction are monitored continuously. In order to maintain accreditation, hospitals are required to measure patient acuity and care requirements and provide adequate hours of nursing care to meet those requirements. In addition, our hospital's ability to maintain the confidence of the community in providing top quality care determines in large measure the success of our future. Finally, Providence believes that if there are issues with mandatory overtime and on-call at our facility, that it should be handled at the negotiating table. Collective bargaining affords management and nursing representatives to work out local issues with solutions that work for that community. Flexibility in developing solutions and adjusting those along the way is far preferable to a one-size solution prescribed in state law. Providence is scheduled to begin negotiations with the union in the middle of March, and mandatory overtime will be a part of that, and mandatory on-call also. Providence respectfully requests that the Alaska Legislature allow us the opportunity to address these critical issues during our upcoming negotiations. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to appear before you to present testimony on Senate Bill 12.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like for you to give a clarification to me. You said that you're going to be in negotiations starting the middle of March. It's my understanding that you've already started your negotiation, and you started them back in January or February, end of January, the first part of February.
Madam Chair, that is not correct. Our first meeting is March 19th.
Not until the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had spoke with some people and I got some different information. I'm not sure whether maybe it was delayed or something of that nature. But I was told that the negotiations have been started already. But if they haven't started and they are going to start, I hope that you will take up these issues with them at the bargaining table during the negotiations. But in the meantime, the bill will just go forward because there's a need for it. From my standpoint, you know, you made some examples about some of the emergency situations. I don't believe that there's any nurse that's working in a hospital or any other setting, if there was an emergency situation that you brought up, that they would not stay there and do whatever needed to be done. But if it's ongoing and just regular shift work and you're working overtime every day or three or four times a week, that's not emergency. But it does cause a hazard. And so I want all of those issues to be addressed. So I hope that they will be taken up at the bargaining table. And if they're not, we hope that we can craft some bill that all of you will get together and make sure that we have a good bill for this state.
Madam Chair, I respect your opinion. The on-call that we're talking about, there are staff who are there in those units providing routine care on a daily basis. The on-call that I am concerned about has to do with the emergencies that come up in the middle of the night. My staff in the NICU do not know how to circulate on an OR case if a baby's intestines ruptures. We have to call in a team from the operating room to be able to do that. If we lose on-call, we may not be able to get volunteers at 2:00 in the morning to come in and do that because they may not even answer the phone. That's the issue that we're talking about, is trying to make sure we have on-call people available who specialize in those procedures to come in when there is an emergency.
Yes, I understand that quite well. And as I said, I appreciate your testimony, and there's always room for the discussion.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes,
briefly,
Senator Passban.
Yes, you know, the business that you're in is in the business of providing care in emergencies. And so what I'm kind of interested in is how routine is the emergency? In other words, that's what hospitals and emergency rooms are for, and kind of how routine is it? So, you know, is this something that happens once every 4 months, or is this weekly? You know, if it's weekly, then it's routine, and I'm less in, you know, in other words, it tells me something. So kind of, if you could explain that a little more?
Through the chair, yes, sir. Some of these emergencies that come up, like the intestine that ruptures in a neonate, that does not happen frequently, okay? It may only happen twice a year. But if it's one child or one person who doesn't get the care they need when that happens, then it's unacceptable. To lose one life is unacceptable. There are other things that come up more frequently, a ruptured appendectomy, but there's a team in the OR that's there that can handle that. It's only when a second crisis comes up that there's no one there. And we will have other people testify from our OR as to how that happens and how frequently that may occur. But it's the one time that it may happen in a year that you need to have that team there to handle it. And when it's specialized people, nursing is not just, I'm a nurse, but I can't go in to a critical care unit and take care of a patient, okay? I can't go into the OR and operate on someone who's having a heart bypass, okay? A nurse is not just a nurse that can go anywhere. If we were, it would be easy. We could go and float everywhere. The teams that we're talking about who are on call are very specialized teams. That's all they do. They have honed in their skills. That's what they care for. Those kind of procedures, take a heart bypass surgery, normally happens during the daytime as a scheduled thing. It's only when someone at night comes in who's had a heart attack that was unexpected, who needs to go in and have that surgery right then, or they're going to die from their heart attack. That's when we have to call them in. And there's only a handful of nurses who know how to do those kinds of procedures.
No further? Thank you so much. Marilyn Edwards.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marilyn Edwards, and I'm the operating room clinical manager at Providence Alaska Medical Center. I've been a nurse for 31 years, 30 of those in the operating room, the last 5 years at Providence. My immediate concerns revolve around safe quality patient outcomes and a safe work environment for my operating room staff. It would be devastating to patient outcomes to enact a one-size solution prescribed in state law to resolve, control, a mandatory nurse overtime concern that does not exist at the Providence Alaska Medical Center operating room. We pride ourselves in the OR at Providence in being able to provide quality care to our patients needing surgical intervention while providing optimal work-life balance for our staff. We have staff RNs scheduled to work from Sunday at 6:45 a.m. through Saturday at 7 p.m. We are fully staffed in the OR with RNs. I have zero vacancies currently. To clarify optimum work-life balance, less than half of my nurses work full-time. The full breakdown is as follows. I have 48 OR registered nurses total. This includes two educators, one RN traveler, six team leads, which are specialty clinical nurses over a certain specialty, and one registered dialysis nurse. Eight of my 48 nurses work 12-hour shifts. Four of these 12-hour shifts were added in the past year at the request of these four RNs out of 48. Seven nurses currently work 10-hour shifts, and 33 of my nurses work 8-hour shifts. 22 of the 48 RNs work a 1.0 full-time equivalent position, less than half of my RNs. 9 RNs work at 0.9 full-time equivalent, 4 RNs work at 0.8, 2 RNs work at 0.6. We have 10 registry RNs, which is a registry RN is only required to work 3 shifts per month with minimal call. A 1.0 full-time employee working 6:45 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. Monday through Friday has an average of 1 evening call, 1 night call, and 2 weekend shifts, either as scheduled shifts or call per a 4-week period. A 12-hour RN, a 0.9 FTE, usually has night or weekend call. Much of this call is assigned around the individual RN's request because they may want the call scheduled when they are also scheduled to work to allow them to have consecutive days and nights off at a time to spend with their families. I currently have 2 RN team leaders that volunteer to take second night call more often. One team lead averages 7 to 9 orthopedic call shifts per month. The one heart team leader averages 14 to 17 calls or shifts per month that she volunteers for. During the interview process for a new position in the operating room, all OR staff candidates are notified of the call requirements for the OR. The assigned call coverage is necessary to provide rapid, which means 30 minutes from when notified, response for emergent patient care above what we are routinely staffed for based on volume trends of operation. I have read and heard anecdotal stories of nurses being tired and unable to provide quality, safe care to our patients. One such story I saw in the February 09 edition of the Alaska Nurses Association publication reports an acuity system that was failing the nurses at a facility. There was sadness expressed regarding the load these nurses carried home with them. I'm unsure if the overworked and understaffed nurses that this article mentions were in a Montana facility where the author's relative received care. I'm not sure because it does not mention the location of the facility. Why I bring this up is that we provide for time off for the employee to be with their sick and dying relative out of state. During this period, ORRNs volunteered and covered the mentioned employee shifts and call while we interviewed and contracted to bring a traveling RN in to fill the staffing gap so as not to overburden our nurses with more call for a longer duration. If the fellow PMC OR nurses had not been allowed to cover the call shifts due to already meeting their call and work requirements as set out by this bill, we would not have been able to accept heart patients during this short time period. That would be devastating to these critically ill patients to have to turn them away, to have to divert them from the care they desperately need. And to go into just briefly about diversion. Diversion is when we don't have the staff to be able to staff the OR for a procedure. The facility goes on divert. If all 3 facilities in Anchorage are on divert, actually no one is on divert. Someone needs to be able to care for that patient. Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to testify before this committee.
Thank you very much. Any questions? We would like to have copies of your written testimony if that's possible also. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy Davids.
Senator Davis and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Davis and I'm from Juneau, Alaska. I've been a registered nurse for 40 years. I'm currently working part-time as a hospice home health nurse doing home visits, direct patient care. Historically, I served as a public health nurse across Alaska in Sitka, Bethel, and Southeast region, and then ultimately finished my career as a public health nurse by being the chief of public health nursing for the state. So I have had the opportunity to be familiar with nurse issues from across the state. Today, I am before you, though, as the president of the Alaska Nurses Association. I am grateful that this bill is back before us again. Senate Bill 12, we've heard a lot of various discussions about its importance or its irrelevance. I would like to say that as a nurse and as the president of the Alaska Nurses Association, I want to support and encourage you to pass Senate Bill 12. It is a patient safety issue. This state certainly deserves a standard statewide assurance that patients in all of the hospitals, long-term care facilities, and any other health care setting would be provided assurances that their staff are alert and rested and capable of taking care of them. From all of the nurses I've worked with, from myself as a direct care provider, nurse, I want to do the very best I can for any patient that's under my care. I don't think any nurse wants less. There are times, though, when our health care pressures and our health care facility pressures create an extra burden on being able to do that. And this is why the mandatory overtime prohibition is important. I believe that there are adequate safeguards in this bill to cover unforeseen emergencies. And some of these midnight surgeries and car accidents and plane crashes would certainly fall under unforeseen circumstances that I think any nurse and all nurses would rise to that occasion. Those should not be your standard plan of staffing, though. Unforeseen emergencies are just that. They're unforeseen. You can't plan for them. All professional nurses, I believe, would rise to that occasion. But that is not a staffing plan for dealing with shortages. I think that as we've listened, the Hospital and Nursing Home Association talked about their data that they've collected. I believe that the bulk of that data comes from discussions with administrators rather than with staff-level nurses. The Alaska Nurses Association did a survey last spring across the state speaking with nurses, and we do have that data available for the committee if you would like. And we did find that nurses routinely were asked to work without adequate rest periods between shifts. It's really an issue for patient safety. I believe that all of us can get behind that. We, the employers, the healthcare facilities, nurses, patients, I believe would all support an improvement and an assurance for patient safety. There's been some discussion that it's a bargaining issue. Well, I think that, interestingly enough, it could be a bargaining issue in that working hours and overtime could be addressed in a collective bargaining agreement. However, not all nurses work under a collective bargaining agreement. And curiously enough, in one of our association's discussions with one of the bargaining units, they declined to make it a collective bargaining issue because they said that the legislature would be taking care of that. So someone needs to take care of this, and I believe Senate Bill 12 is a good answer. I would also say that one of the nurses who testified commented on the issue around the economic crisis that our country is in and the pressures that puts on her for providing for her family. My great concern is that the economic pressures are going to increase the likelihood of mandatory overtime as people lose their jobs and nurses seek to try to cover the economic needs of their families and perhaps asking for additional overtime in order to make ends meet economically. This Senate Bill 12 is still the best assurance for patient safety. Regardless of what my personal preference or my personal needs might be as a nurse for my own economic welfare, it all boils down to what's the best thing for the patient. And I believe that this standard statewide approach to defining maximum work hours and minimum rest period is the best assurance, and I look for your support for Senate Bill 12.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Christy R. Toussaint.
Good afternoon, Senator Davis, Chair People. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Christy R. Toussaint. I am a registered nurse. I have been a registered nurse for 30 years. I am currently the Director of Neurosciences at Providence Alaska Medical Center. I am also a Board of Directors member of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses Certification Corporation, the largest specialty nursing certification corporation in the country. We have pioneered healthy work environments and looking at the nurse's role in maintaining those work environments over the past several years. But I wanted to share a little bit of my own history. Without going into details, in 1983, I purchased my first home. I worked 24 hours of overtime a week for a year and a half to save up the down payment. It was a choice. I am a nationally certified critical care expert in the bedside care of critical care patients. I am currently also a certified expert in the care of progressive care patients, as well as neuroscience patients. At the time I worked this overtime, I worked in medical intensive care in Brooklyn, New York. I chose to do my overtime in the emergency room. Not just any emergency room, we saw 100,000 patients per year. It was what we fondly called a knife and gun club. And I did that overtime directly following an 8-hour shift by choice. It was easier for me to work 16 hours a day, 3 days a week, have the weekends off, and enjoy the possibility of potentially owning my own home. I share this with you because I'm very concerned about the language in your bill, limiting a nurse's choice to work certain hours. You heard testimony about a Baylor plan, but what about the nurse who wants to work 2 16-hour shifts on a Monday and Wednesday because her husband is off on those days to provide optimal parent-child care at home? What about the nurse who wants to work 3 16-hour shifts in a row because that enables her or him to spend adequate time at home and to improve their work-life-family balance? What about the nurse whose spouse loses their job, who wants the choice to work those additional hours so they can support a family in these trying economic times? We're not talking about mandatory overtime. We're talking about choices. I have been in Alaska for a little less than 3 years. I came from the state of New Jersey. Prior to that, I lived in New York State, and prior to that, in Pennsylvania, and I've worked in hospitals in all three states. I have worked in hospitals, one in particular in Brooklyn, where mandatory overtime was used to staff the units in one of the worst nursing shortages that we had experienced in the past 2 decades. And yet, it did not have that huge of an impact. That state did eventually enact some legislation minimizing its use. But overall, I can honestly tell you that in 5 years, I was never mandated to work, because we really did choose to work the hours that we wanted to. I was also in neonatal intensive care. I was on call, and to be honest, my skiing is much better because of it. By being on call directly following my shift, going out on what we called a retrieval, bringing babies back, I would take an extra day off and go skiing. So the flexibility in working, the flexibility in choosing the hours that you want to work, are important components for any registered nurse. My patients have never been in danger. I can honestly tell you that the nurses that I've worked with over the years have considered that flexibility as one of the driving forces in staying in nursing. There are a few who may say that the work is overwhelming, that they're very tired. My experiences in Alaska are that they are very, very well staffed when I compare that with my experiences in the Northeast. 26 years of experiences. I currently am on faculty at 2 universities. I teach nursing students here in Alaska at the University of Alaska for fun. I'm also on faculty at the University of Phoenix, and I teach in the graduate and undergraduate programs for nurses. I have contacts with nurses across the United States, and if one concept comes out clearly in my classrooms, it's the need for autonomy and making their own choices. Everything I've read and heard about this bill in Alaska indicates that mandatory overtime is really not a great problem here. There may be small instances of issues throughout the state, but I think they can be resolved by developing healthier work environments, developing nurses' autonomy, and allowing these nurses to rise to the professional standard that they've wanted to work in throughout the years. Thank you so much for your time.
You're quite welcome. Any questions? We only going to be able to take a couple more people before we have to close. And I'm going to go off site now to Stacy Allen. Are you there?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I am. Thank you.
You may testify.
All right, thanks. My name is Stacy Allen, and I've been a registered nurse in Alaska since 1985. 20 years of that time, I worked labor and delivery at a local hospital. Currently, I am the business agent for Laborers Local 341, and we represent about 265 nurses at Alaska Regional Hospital. One thing that I haven't heard too much discussion on concerning this bill is the conflict that nurses feel when there is a conflict between their ethical, moral, and legal responsibilities to be a patient advocate and what is their personal need to not work more than is safe for themselves or the public. One thing I remember from nursing school is that the nurse is uniquely placed to be the patient advocate because there is not any particular monetary gain received by the nurse depending on what operation is done, what test is done. It puts us in a position that the public has come to expect a high degree of care, not just literally task-wise, but also ethically from a nurse. That also leads, however, to some conflict in a nurse, and there's more studies coming out recently talking about things that keep nurses from the profession or keep them from hospital nursing. And one of those is the stress that you feel when you know that you're probably not safe to work, and I myself can say that there have been times when I was lucky in my practice of nursing care as opposed to safe. And knowing that if you told your supervisor that I got to go home, I got to take a break, there's no one else to replace you, or the person being called in is just as tired as you are. A bill like SB 12 makes a level playing field, not just for the individual nurse, but for the institutions as well. It sets a minimum standard that is something that the public has a right to expect in healthcare. And Laborers Local 341 supports this bill. We have supported all the legislation concerning this issue that's been introduced in the past. And our 2,200 members who are potential patients support this bill as well. And thank you very much for letting me talk.
Thank you very much. Any questions? The last person to testify today would be Roger Lorenz.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Roger Leverance. I've been a nurse for 13 years, and I've been at Providence for 12 of those. I'm the clinical nurse educator for the Heart Center. I'm responsible for staff in the cath lab, our observation unit, and our cardiovascular intervention unit. Cath lab is a highly specialized area. Patients having heart attacks, strokes, other life-threatening problems receive care. Staff consists of RNs, cardiovascular technologists, and radiology technologists. All these staff has extensive specialized training, making them competent to work in the cath lab. We care for patients from neonatal, who are just hours old, to those over 100 years old. I can't have just any RN come into the cath lab and work. It's a very specialized area and takes a lot of technical training. It takes approximately 1 year to train a critical care nurse to work in the cath lab, which means that if I have a staff member that comes down from the ICU who has years of experience up there, it's still going to take me a year to train them to be safe in the cath lab. We staff the cath lab Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. From 4 until 7:30 the next morning, we utilize a call team. This call team consists of an RN, radiology technologist, and a cardiovascular technologist. Each individual takes one night a week of call and one weekend of call about every 4 or 5 weeks. When hiring and taking a position in the cath lab, these are clearly specified and accepted part of taking the position. It's not unusual for this call team to be called in the middle of the night to provide for a patient experiencing a heart attack or other life-threatening emergency. Without the availability of this call team, many patients may not receive the timely care that they require. Recently, the call team was called in for a patient having a heart attack. This was 2 o'clock in the morning. The staff had worked the day before. Staff was scheduled to work the next day. Because of the availability of this call team, the patient survived. That team was there from about 2 until a little after 4:30 in the morning. They did show up the next morning and were promptly told that they could go home. There are nights when this call team doesn't get called in. There are other nights when they're there, like this call team, for several hours. The restrictions that would be imposed if this bill passes would negatively impact our availability, our ability to care for this patient population due to the unavailability of trained staff. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you very much. Any questions? It is now 3 o'clock and we're going to adjourn at this time. I do want to say that this bill will come back before us and it will be published so that you know in advance, because there are other people that do want to testify. And at this point, we will adjourn at 3 o'clock. Thank you.